Here comes episode number 69.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. Whether you have a small RV like the Road Trek Jennifer and I travel in, or a great big Class A motorhome, a fifth wheel, a pop-up, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about being out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, as well as sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and tech to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking the Podcast is all about, the RV lifestyle. This episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast brought to you by Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, bringing you the largest inventory of Class B's from three locations. And Leisure Time RV, a family-owned dealership in Central Florida. Your vacation starts at Leisure Time RV. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our first official show of 2016. And here is wishing you a happy new year and a year filled with adventure and travel and hassle-free trips in your RV. We've got a lot coming up in this episode. First of all, something I think you're going to really like. Help for planning your bucket list for this year. I've got an interview with an author of a brand new book called The Best Sights to See at America's National Parks. And before you plan your 2016 travels, you might want to follow up some of his suggestions. That's coming up a bit later in the interview section of the podcast. Plus, we have news about what to expect regarding gas prices in 2016, some RV-related traveling tips, reader and listener questions, and a great off-the-beaten-path report, all that coming up in this episode of the podcast. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hi, dear.
Hello, sir. Boy, I can't wait to hear this episode.
Yes, I can't wait to finish it. It's going to be good. We got lots of stuff. So many interesting stories out there. I mentioned there's another story you're going to really like. Well, I'd like to run down to the Everglades this week because starting in...
Just are they hunting snakes again?
Yes. I'll talk about that in the news section. They're hunting those big pythons. Man, they were everywhere out there.
They don't have any natural enemies except people.
Yeah, and not that many people want to go hunting pythons in the Everglades. Yeah. I want to go. I think that would be such a great story.
It would take a great food shortage for people to go hunt python.
Well, I think, you know, they've got a big contest going. I think it would be really fun to go cover that.
Maybe there are a lot of people that would like to go do that. Are you hinting?
Yes, I'm hinting.
Well, we can go.
Okay. That's like leaving tomorrow. Okay. I'm ready.
Leave tomorrow?
Well, certainly.
We can't go. You got physical therapy. You got to get healthy.
Yeah, I got a month or two of physical therapy for this shoulder replacement. I wonder if I could wrestle a python with one hand.
This is a conflict because we've got to go up to Tequamanum Falls.
For our big winter camp out coming out at the end of the month.
Not going to happen this month.
I want to go catch some pythons, at least do a video story.
What's the dates? You've wanted to do that.
It's up through February 14th. So, you know, maybe we could go.
For our birthdays. What a way to celebrate our birthdays.
Yeah, mine is February 8th and yours is February 12th. That would be fun.
That makes it easy. He doesn't get in trouble for forgetting my birthday. His is the 8th. Mine's the 12th.
Yep, there you go. So I just think it's my birthday. I better get her a card and stuff. But okay, so we did that. We just got back from a trip up to northern Michigan. We went up. I got cleared to drive on Wednesday. And so New Year's Eve day, Thursday, we took off and went up north. And had a great time in our little RV. But we really, there was no place to stay, to camp, because all the campgrounds were closed. And we thought we've got a couple of places we could boondock, but they were snowed in. They had a foot of snow. The roads were unplowed.
And icy.
And icy. So we ended up having to get a hotel room.
And it was charming. It was a cute little place.
Now, come on. You're being kind.
I am being kind. Other people would probably do just great with it, but we're kind of spoiled because the first sign that things were not looking good was the little white noise machine.
Yes, they had a white noise machine. I said, well, look at this. Turn this on. There's a sound of thunderstorms or water or just this.
That's a sure giveaway.
That the place is noisy, and it was.
It was very noisy.
And the people were great. They were wonderful.
Nobody very was kind trying to. People.
And the people who were staying there weren't obnoxious or anything. No, it's just that you could hear every footstep, every voice in paper thin walls.
And then the room that we lucked out getting, because I have dust allergies.
Well, everybody does, I think.
I don't know if everybody does or not. It didn't bother you any. But my head just started going swelling. And I thought, I miss my road trek. I miss my clean sheets.
And it wasn't as though the room was not dirty. It just hadn't been used in a long time. And so dust accumulates. And, you know, anyway, we just realized that not having our own bed as we're used to in our RV is, it's really a step down, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, so we miss that, but we will get a chance to do some winter camping in just a couple of weeks at our Taquamenon Falls winter campout. And we still have, I think, a couple of openings, although we're picking up a lot more people. We had like 30 people last year. I think we've got about double that right now. And
might have to have two bonfires.
We probably will have
that to. That might work. Let's make three and we'll stand right in the middle.
Yeah, that's great. The issue up there is the State Department of Natural Resources plows our sites for us, so they need to know how many are coming. And I'll put a link on the website. If you've ever never tried winter camping, you can try it. We even set up a little closed Facebook group for everybody going. It's a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing many of the people we met last year and a lot of new people. So
I want to see the falls.
Yeah, I've seen the falls in the wintertime. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. So that's what we got coming up. But I still would like to go do the snake hunt.
I know. It's on your bucket list.
It is on my bucket list. I think that would be pretty interesting. All right. Well, are you ready to go to work? It's time for your tip of the week.
Time for me to work.
Here we go.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
Like all RVers, we love to explore. And the best way to explore as we travel around North America is by hiking. And so one of our Christmas presents to each other this year was something that'll make that hiking and exploring a little easier on our knees and our joints. Trekking poles. Trekking poles, like ski poles, allow your arms to help propel you forward and upward. Whether walking on flat ground or up steep hills, poles can help to reduce the impact on your legs, your knees, your ankles, and your feet. This is especially true when going downhill. In fact, I came across a 1999 study in the Journal of Sports Medicine that found that trekking poles can reduce compressive force on the knees by up to 25%. Besides that, trekking poles and the extra points of contact they provide significantly increase your traction on slippery surfaces like mud, snow, and loose rocks. I found a whole bunch of reasons why trekking poles are such a good thing to have in an article on a website called Outdoor Gear Lab. We'll link to it in the show notes so you can check them out yourself. So what poles to buy? They start at around $20 and they go up to over $200. Like anything, you get what you pay for. But we knew we wanted good ones. We visited our local REI store and tried out several. We checked out the grips. They come in rubber, cork, and foam. Some were comfortable, some not so much. Some poles are for women, some are for men. They come in three sections or two sections. Some twist lock, not so good, we learned. Others have secure locking tabs. Some are aluminum, some are carbon. Carbon is lighter and tougher, and that's what we eventually chose, paying about $130 for a set. We will link to a whole bunch of them on Amazon for you to check out. But we do recommend that you do what we did. Go to an outdoor store and try them on your hands. That's the best way to assure you're getting a set that is comfortable. We'll also link in the show notes page to a helpful guide we read from REI on how to choose the right set of hiking poles. All of those links can be found in my tip section on the show notes page of roadtrekking.com/69. So there you go, trekking poles, to make your road trekking, hiking adventures a little less stressful on your joints.
questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Well, we're going to take email questions this week. We got a whole bunch of email questions. Not so many voicemail questions, but email questions. And we'll just kind of go through them. This is one that comes in, Jen, from Jeff and Christy. And they say, do you have an itinerary for your trip out west that you'd be willing to share? We'd be interested in routes and stops at points of interest.
Well, no.
Right. No, we don't. We never have an idea. Well, we know where we want to go. And by the way, this episode is going to be actually pretty good. We have a really good point of interest for anybody going west in Nebraska on our Off the Beaten Path report coming up. And as I said in our internet view section, we're talking to the author of a book about the best sites in America's national parks. And I asked him, what's the best route? What's the give me the best place for everybody to go this summer if they've never really explored our national parks? And he gives you some great recommendations. But back to us, we don't travel with an itinerary. We used to, but that's a lot of problems.
But this year, we want a plan because we want to go to as many national parks as we can.
Yep, I've decided we've been to, you know, as I was interviewing this guy, I realized we've been to almost everyone he suggested except Volcanoes National Park, and we can't drive the road trek there, but I know you'd like that one, so that's on our bucket list someday. But, you know, we've been from Acadia out west. The only one we haven't been to is Yosemite, so that's a big one in California that we got to do.
We kind of run out of steam from Michigan to California.
But Jeff and Christy ask about itinerary, and let me just share this. When we first started RVing, we did. We planned out everything. We made reservations. And more often than not,
we didn't keep our reservations because we stopped, got waylaid along the way, and then we lost our money for the reservations that we had made.
Yep. Campgrounds are not very, they don't want to return your money if you don't show up. So we learned the hard way, don't make reservations. And then we worried, well, we'll never find a spot. And that is not a problem. We always have found a spot.
Sometimes we've driven a long time to find that spot.
Well, I think of one time through an Indian reservation out in Wyoming, and we were looking for a national campground to boondock in, and we had a map, wasn't a very good map, and it was pitch black. We couldn't find it, and it's just our own fault. But most of it, I mean, 99% of the time, yes, we've never had a problem. So, you know, I'd urge you, you know, you want to figure out how far you're going to go. And like our goal that we shared last week was we want to travel no more than 350 miles a day and finish by 3:30 in the afternoon. So you can kind of look at a map, Jeff and Christy, and figure out where you want to go, where you should be. And then you can look around and see what's in that area that you could see. That's the way we travel. Other people are way more meticulous. They have every detailed plan where they're going to stop and what they're going to have for lunch. That's not us.
And that's good for them because there's security. They feel they have control of everything by having all those plans and reservations and everything. And us, we're more comfortable just going.
So if you really want to have an itinerary, go for it. That's my suggestion. Plot out 350 miles and start using that. That's where you want to end and plot out your route. I'd also urge you to drive, get off the interstates as best as you can because that's where all the fun stuff is that you'll see. And I would also say lighten up. I mean, just be prepared to enjoy what you're going to see because you will find stuff that says, well, what's that? Oh, we can't stop. We got to be at this city.
That really has been frustrating for us. We have wanted to stop at here, there, and see different things, but we can't. We got to keep going.
So, Jeff and Christy, these are just the lessons that we learned, and I hope that helps you out. Use what we like to call serendipity travel. We do a little seminar at RV shows around the country where we talk about how that works for us. And if you happen to be at the next one we're going to do is the Family Motor Coach Association in March in Perry, Georgia. We'll be talking about that, but enjoy it. Okay, another question. This from Timothy. My wife and I are interested in purchasing a new Road Trek E-Trek or CS Adventurous in the next 12 months. We're very interested in the ability to never or rarely plug in and the freedom that lithium-ion batteries provide, coupled with the underhood generator, alternator, and the solar panels that come with those Road Treks. I would appreciate it if you would provide an update on your overall experience, good and bad, with this technology now that you've been using it for a while. Thank you, Timothy. Well, we have the CS Adventurous, the Road Trek CS Adventurous. We have a rooftop filled with 650 watts of solar power. We have a full bank of lithium-ion batteries that gives us 20,000 amp hours. What does all that mean? It means that we don't have to plug in.
we've been happy. We haven't had problems. We just take off and go, and it's been reliable.
And we do more and more boondocking, or being off the grid, not in a commercial campground, not surrounded by neighbors and those skyscraper Class A motorhomes that are on both sides of you. We just prefer being in the middle of the mountains or the beach or the wilderness, whatever we can find. And, you know, there's not a place to plug in out there. And so we don't plug in. And that's what's so nice about these. We just have not had a problem with it. Everybody said, how long can you run your air conditioner? Well, it depends on how hot, but easily all night long now with these big systems.
And we like the freedom of boondocking, because a lot of campfires in a small area, it can be a cloud of smoke. And again, I go back to my allergies, and I don't do well with smoke. I just got a couple little allergy things that happen. So we love the freedom to be able to get away from everybody.
So I just can't say enough about it. I mean, our experience has been great. I'm not an engineer, so I don't tinker with it. I can't tell you how it works. It just works. And we really don't need to plug in. Sometimes we do. Now, we will be up at the Taquamenon Falls winter camp out, and we're going to give our heater a lot of stress, because it's going to be very cold and be running 24/7. And they have electricity there. So I'll plug in there, and I'll actually use, I'll also plug in a little, we have a little ceramic heater that we run as well. But by and large, we don't have to plug in. That's one of the reasons we never have a worry about a place to stay, because we can stay and we've got some little secrets that I can't give, because everybody would do it and then I wouldn't be able to do it myself. But there are lots of places that have parking lots that you can park in. How's that? Is that safe enough to say?
I think that sums it up.
And they're actually pretty empty parking lots, or they're very safe parking lots, and they happen to be near businesses that you can use. Some businesses openly welcome you, like Cracker Barrel. And we have found wonderful darkened parking lots to spend the night when we're just traveling through an area.
Walmart's pretty bright. You need to everybody black says out Walmart, your windows.
But, and we love Walmart. They're really nice to RVers. But it's very bright, and they're often very busy with, you know, people cleaning the parking lot and trucks and everything. So we like to be in less crowded places. And I guess I can say sometimes hotel parking lots, if you ask. Go in and ask, kindly ask, humbly ask. They'll say, well, yeah, you can stay out there. And that's often, we've done that before and had great luck with that. So tricks you'll pick
that
up.
That started when we went in to get a room, and all the rooms were taken. And then I said, well, is it okay if we just park in your lot? And they said, sure.
Yeah, so try it out. But back to your question on our experience, good or bad. I'm trying to think, do we have any bad experiences with it?
I can't think of anything.
I can't either. I think there's nothing but good is that we can, you know, we've got power wherever we go. And it's really nice. Well, you just said one thing. Go ahead.
One thing, the scraping.
Yeah, our batteries are down low, so there's not a lot of clearance. Now, I don't want to get people thinking, oh, I can't get one because I don't have clearance. But, you know, you want to be aware of, you're going up a real steep incline, a short, steep incline. You know, you might have the steel frame that holds the batteries might scrape.
The spare tire.
Now, we've taken our road truck down two-lane tracks through the forest, never had a problem with that.
Right.
So I don't want you to think that that's a big issue, but that's probably the only thing, because we got all those heavy batteries in the back.
You just have to be aware that some people don't have the proper grade when you go to enter their parking lot.
Our son's former home in Georgia had a really steep driveway, and I could get in it okay, but when I backed out, I would scrape a little bit. And I had to just turn the wheel just right. You learn that. But that's about the only thing I can think of with all those extra batteries. Maybe a little bit of ground clearance issues, but not much. And we've had great luck with it. So hope that helps you. One more email we want to take in. And this one comes from George. And he says, great reading about your life in the RV. I hope to spend a major amount of time in the RV I'm getting ready to buy in January. I would like more information about how to live in one in winter conditions. I'm an avid skier, so I'd like to have more advice on how to survive in cold. I read your story about Upper Michigan. Oh, my mother still owns a home on Gull Lake in Michigan, so I'll be going there this coming year. I live in Dillon, Colorado. If you come out this way, stop by the Dam Brewery in Dillon. I manage the business. Plan on riding off into the sunset in my road truck in about 2 years. Okay, George, that's a great place. I'll put that on our list. The Dam Brewery in Dillon, Colorado. I kind of like the sounds of that.
I bet you do.
I do. That's one of the fun things, is all the microbrews that are out there, and you get to taste all these different, you know, that's become quite a thing.
I'm just such a wet blanket for you. I don't drink beer.
Oh, man. That's half the fun.
Maybe the first sip.
Maybe the first sip. All right. So he asked about winter camping. Well, we don't live in ours full time, but we go every all year round in our road trek. And including, we just came back this winter, and the heater was on. Everything's nice and warm. The only change that you have is water. And the biggest inconvenience is using the bathroom and water. If you're gonna cook food, washing dishes and stuff. So you have to carry your own fresh water.
I think it would be a bit of a challenge, but being a guy, he probably would, trade that off for the freedom to go. Is that the bathroom flushing with the antifreeze, and you can't wash dishes. You got to be careful how you get rid of your water. But I'm sure he knows how to do this. He's from Colorado.
So you bring fresh water, and if you're going to wash your dishes, you heat them on the stove. You heat the water on the stove, and then you can wash them, and then you can usually throw it out unless it's got a bunch of junk. You can throw it outside. Don't throw it underneath the step that you leave because it'll ice up and you'll fall down. But
he knows all this. He's from Colorado.
Well, I'm just thinking I'm going to get all those little worry warts saying, oh, you should tell them not to put it under the step. So I'm trying
to
cover them.
And you got to be careful of the bears and the critters.
The bears are all sleeping. But
that's true.
Then in terms of using the bathroom, yes, use it, but you flush with toilet. So
you flush with antifreeze.
You flush the toilet with antifreeze, and usually an equal amount of antifreeze to whatever is in the bowl. How's that? It's pretty disgusting. So there you go, George. Hey, we would love to get your questions. We love to answer them on the podcast. You can do it two ways. You can send us an email, and the link is on our roadtrekking.com blog. And by the way, for more information about all of this stuff, because we've written extensively about all of it, it's all on the blog. Just go to roadtrekking.com. And you can also leave us a question by going to the leave voicemail link. It's on the right-hand side of roadtrekking.com. We would love to get your questions. In fact, we'll look forward to getting some voice questions on next week as we try and alternate between email and voice. So there we go. All right. Thank you, dear.
Yes. No snow for me to shovel today.
No snow. It's cold, though. It's very cold in Michigan. But
blue sky. That's our trade-off. Yeah. Blue sky, we get cold weather.
Well, there we go. All right. Thanks, everybody, for the questions. This part of the podcast is sponsored by Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana. Also, Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, bringing you the largest inventory of Class Bs you can find anywhere from three locations. They have from all the major Class B manufacturers in stock, used and new. And all three of these dealerships have a really terrific fly and drive program. You shop online, get your best price, and then when you make your deal with Van City or Creston RV or Wagon Trail RV, you fly out to their location, they'll pick you up at the airport, they'll take you to the dealership, and there you pick up your already set up RV, and they'll pay you $500, reimburse you towards your airfare to get out there. And your RV is, of course, fully prepared for travel, complete with full tanks of fuel and propane. Here's Dan, the van man from Van City RV, with some of this week's specials.
Thanks, Mike. Well, Happy New Year to everybody. We hope to have a great 2016. We got some great deals on some nice used road trucks right now. You can check those out at vancityrv.com. We're also going to be at the St. Louis RV Show, January 14th to the 17th. You can call us here at Van City for all details, 1-800-467-3905. Or you can check out all our websites at vancityrv.com, crestonrv.com, or wagontrailrv.com.
News. Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
And it is good news. Gas prices expected to be low for all of 2016. The Automobile Club of America, the AAA, estimates the average price of gas in 2016 is likely to end up somewhere between $2.25 and $2.45 a gallon, which would be cheaper or at least comparable to this year's average of about $2.40 per gallon. Motorists enjoyed some of the cheapest gas prices in years thanks to a global glut in oil supplies, which helped keep the price of oil and gas production low, says the Auto Club. Gas prices remained at their lowest level for the year-end holiday since the 2008-09 season. 2008-2009 holiday season. Increased demand from holiday travelers temporarily sort of kept prices frozen in place, but gas they say, could get even cheaper this month as demand tapers off. Energy prices are forecast to remain low all of 2016, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Based on typical seasonal trends, the national average in gas could remain relatively flat, or it may even drop as much as 10 cents a gallon over the next few weeks. And by late winter, the average national could rise a little bit as refineries conduct seasonal maintenance. You know how that goes. They go up and down at that time. But regional gas prices continue to vary a little bit from state to state. Significant uncertainty over the cost of crude in 2016. But in general, it looks like gas prices in 2016 will be the same or even less than they were last year. So that's pretty darn excited. And gas prices last year, 2015, averaged about 94 cents a gallon less than they were in 2014. So they're going down even more, barring some major global information disaster, such a thing as a conflict in the Middle East and stuff like that. And you can't predict that. But it looks like another great year for gas prices and diesel as well. And one more story. We kind of talked about this earlier with Jennifer. The Python Challenge. Man, I want to cover that. It's being reinstated to remove invasive snakes from Florida's Everglades National Park. I will put all of the details on the website, the links to everything you need to know about it. But you know what we're talking about? We're talking about Burmese pythons. They're one of many invasive species that have been wreaking havoc in Florida's Everglades National Park. So to remedy the problem, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission is bringing back the Python Challenge. It is a state-sanctioned hunt for pythons, for big snakes, and it starts January 16th and it runs through February 14th this year. The pythons are native to South and Southeast Asia, and since 2000, nearly 2,000 pythons have been removed from the national park. They established themselves in Florida following, they believe, an accidental or an intentional release by pet owners, and they have dramatically impacted the park's ecosystem by preying on native wildlife there, competing with native predators. Now, Burmese pythons prefer to live near streams in rainforests, but they can survive in a variety of habitats, and they have fallen in love with the Everglades. So anyway, this Python Challenge is taking off. Participant hunters compete to catch the most, the longest pythons, and some of these things are 20 feet long, folks. In addition to offering various prizes, the event aims to make people aware of non-native species, how to report them to local authorities. In the previous challenge held in 2013, hunters captured 68 snakes. So there you go. I saw a picture of this one guy who was driving down across the Alligator Alley down there near the Everglades. And one of these pythons was crossing the road, and it took up both lanes. Both lanes. That's how big it was. Well, he took it out. So anyway, the Python Challenge is back, and it is heading January 16th to February 14th, the Everglades National Park. I still got to find a way to go cover that. I really would like to check it out. But all right, what are you going to do? It would be pretty darn fun. All right, what's coming up?
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, I told you at the end of 2015, a couple weeks ago, how the RV calendar was going to fill up with RV shows, travel shows all across the country. And man, it has. This is the peak for an RV show. Why do you want to go to an RV show? Well, first of all, you want to go because they're a lot of fun. You get to see all of the newest stuff, all of the newest accessories as well, all in one place. If you're shopping for one, you can go from one to the other to the other. You don't have to go to a million different dealerships because they're all right there together. But this is prime time, and there's a whole bunch of them. I have a link that I will put up. Just go to the RV calendar part of the show notes on the show notes for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/69. Here's what's coming up. January 6th to the 9th, the Colorado RV Adventure Travel Show at the Colorado Convention Center in Denver. The Wisconsin RV Show, January 6th through the 8th, the Wisconsin Center in Milwaukee. The Knoxville RV Show, January 6th through the 8th at the Sevierville Convention Center in Sevierville, Tennessee, near Knoxville. The Austin Boat and Travel Trailer Show, January 7th through the 10th at the Austin Convention Center in Austin, Texas. The South Carolina RV and Camping Show, January 8th through the 10th at the TD Convention Center in Greenville, South Carolina. The 55th Annual RV and Campgrounds Show in Allentown, Pennsylvania, January 8th through the 10th. The North Carolina RV Dealers Association Greensboro Show at the Greensboro Coliseum Complex, January 8th through the 10th in Greensboro, North Carolina. The Original Pittsburgh RV Show, January 9th through the 17th in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center. The big show that's coming up really the week after that is the Tampa, the Super RV show at in Tampa, Florida. We'll talk about that next week. But there are some others. There's a big one in St. Louis, as you heard from Dan at Van City RV. That's coming up. So links to all of this up on our show notes page. If you got a chance, attend an RV show near you, and you will find everything that you want to know right in one spot. You cannot beat it. RV shows, that's the way to check out RVs.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion
you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
Two of our regular Off the Beaten Path correspondents, Tom and Patty Burkett, have entertained us with lots of their suggestions over the past couple of months, and they've got a great one now for those of you who are going to be heading west this year, and you're heading to the state of Nebraska. Listen up, because you're going to want to check out Pioneer Village. Here's Tom Burkett.
Hi, Jennifer and Mike, and hello to all our road trekking friends. Tom Burkett here with an off-the-beaten-path suggestion for those headed cross-country. If you've spent much time on the smaller highways across the Midwest, you've probably seen a billboard advertising Harold Warp's Pioneer Village. This vintage tourist establishment is located in the tiny town of Minden, Nebraska, 10 miles south of Interstate 80 on Nebraska Highway 10. When you walk into the museum, you'll find yourself standing on a village green, surrounded by about two dozen buildings. Each of these is original, collected from around the state and moved here to make this erstwhile town. Among the buildings are a church, a fort, a toy shop, a doctor's office, and a fire station. The earliest was built in the late 1700s. Inside the buildings are displays that show, chronologically, the development of technology and daily life in the USA. Beyond the green are several large buildings filled with more chronological displays. The transportation collection includes 350 cars from an 1897 steamer to gangster vehicles from the time of Prohibition. There are dozens of horse-drawn contraptions, airplanes, hot air balloons, and fire equipment. Another collection showcases homemaking technology. My favorite in that building is a washing machine powered by a treadmill intended to be operated by the family dog. There are some real oddities in the mix, too. We enjoyed poring over a display showing the evolution of handcuffs over three centuries, and one woman's collection of matched salt and pepper shakers, thousands of them, ranging from tiny hamburgers to giant battery-powered light-up angels. Pioneer Village has a motel and campground just next door, and there's a good local restaurant a block away. Many of these little prairie towns are down for the count because of giant agribusiness, but here you'll find a little bit of life from another age. Wander these little highways through the upper Midwest, and there's still a lot to discover. Happy travels!
Well, thank you so much, Tom Burkett. And if you have an off-the-beaten-path report, just use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. If I put it on the air and use it on our podcast, I'll send you a free road trekking hat, which all the cool kids are wearing in 2016. This part of the podcast is brought to you by Leisure Time RV, serving Central Florida and the internet from Winter Garden, Florida. I love Leisure Time RV. First of all, I love where they're located. They're located in Winter Garden, Florida, which is right near Orlando. It's always warm there. Beautiful, warm weather. But these guys are terrific. This is a family-owned dealership, And they've been in business. They're going to be pushing their 50th anniversary in just a couple of years. They're consistently among the top road trek dealers in North America. Full line of road trek inventory as well as travel trailers. They often have some great buys on used RVs as well. Jennifer and I have visited Leisure Time RV. We met the staff. We're really impressed by their honesty, their integrity, their first-rate service. And here's what I like about them. They deal. They love to deal. And because of the internet now, you know, you can shop for RVs anywhere. So find out what you want, all the options you have, and then call these guys up. They love to deal. And they have some of the best pricing you'll find anywhere. Here's Ken from Leisure Time RV with what's happening this week. Happy New Year, Ken.
Hi, Mike. Ken here from Leisure Time RV in sunny but cool Winter Garden, Florida. Well, I've heard a lot of snowbirds have filled our campgrounds. We want to invite everyone to visit us and check out our inventory. To save time, visit our website, www.leisuretimerv.com. If you have any questions, call 1-800-336-6565 or email admin@leisuretimerv.com. We have a great selection of new road treks from the affordable Zion on the Dodge ProMaster chassis to the Chevy 190s and 210, plus many Mercedes chassis units. Also, we have a few used road treks, one Ranger Electric and one LP Ranger. Both are 2014s, one 2008 210 Popular, one 2003 190 Popular. All are on our website, www.leisuretimerv.com. So please call us at 1-800-336-6565 or email admin@leisuretimerv.com. Don't miss these pre-owned road treks. Before you buy, check with us. We're very competitive. Remember, your vacation starts with Leisure Time RV.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The Small Motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog.
Big News is an avid hiker. He's a longtime editor. He's a Wisconsin native who's been hiking for about 8 years throughout many of our national parks. And with his young son, they have scaled summits 2 miles high almost. They've crossed deserts and walked beneath trees 15 stories over their heads. So he loves our America's national parks. And so he wrote a book. A book called Best Sights to See at America's National Parks, Hitting the Trail. And we will put a link to it, both the Kindle edition and the paperback edition, on our show notes page for this episode of the Road Trekking Podcast. Rob joins us right now. And Rob, this is a big year for our national parks, is it not?
Right, yeah. It's the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. So the Park Service was created, of course, about a century ago, primarily to manage special lands. Yosemite National Park is the generally considered the first park, though it wasn't the first national park, but it was the first that was set aside by the federal government as protected land and then eventually became a national park shortly thereafter. So it was sort of seen at that time that we needed a park service, now that we've got two or three different parks scattered across the West, sort of manage those lands and oversee them. And of course, the service has grown since then, as well as the number of national parks and national park units, such as historic sites, battlefields from the Civil War and Revolutionary War, national monuments, which are usually specific, very localized areas like Mount Rushmore, for example, which wouldn't be a large enough area to be considered a national park, but still needs to be set aside and protected and administered as if it were a national park. So the National Park Service has got a lot of different programs going on this year that are brand new, a lot of improvements to their various parks with new trails, repairs of old trails, new facilities, repairs of old facilities that have probably needed it for a few years. So it should be an exciting year for anyone who wants to travel and see national parks.
No, it is. And I just noticed that many of our bigger national parks had attendance records last year. I wonder how much of an effect the Ken Burns, just the excellent Ken Burns PBS series, America's National Parks, America's Best Idea, he called it. I've been watching that over the past month here as I've been sort of snowbound in Michigan and getting all excited about visiting. But besides your book, that's something else we want to recommend to people to look at, that NPS series by Ken Burns.
Yeah, it's an excellent history of the national parks, and particularly it goes in depth into Yosemite, since that's sort of where the idea originated with John Muir. Definitely that book rekindled interest, I think, in the national parks. Probably the reason most people are going to national parks today, though, are because of low gas prices. It's a great time to get out in an RV or just even, fill up your minivan or your car and a truck and head out to a park. There's probably a little concern about foreign travel. While foreign travel is largely safe, I think a few Americans still are thinking to themselves, given what's happened recently in Paris and a lot of the other terrorist actions, are a little concerned about leaving the country. I think also, as the population ages and we have more elderly people in the country, they're thinking to themselves, I've always wanted to since I was a kid to go see this park, or I wanted to always, get back to that park, which I visited when I was a young child back in the 50s or 40s or 60s even. And so there's an opportunity now, I think, to go visit them from their perspective. They have to go see them. Yeah. Even to a little lesser extent than that, there might be some environmental concerns, I think, about national parks. Definitely, with the global warming, whether you agree with it or not, at least temporarily, the climate is warming. And that's changing the look of some of these parks. Gradually and over time. So I think there's a concern among a few people, certainly among myself, that we ought to get out and go visit these places before they change.
Well, Rob Bignell, tell us now, let's get personal. What is your favorite national park?
What's my favorite
national park? Your absolute favorite one.
Yeah, well, there's not a single park I don't like for some reason. I think one of the underrated parks, though, is probably Zion National Park.
Yeah.
It's in the 10 most visited parks, but I think it offers a classic look of what all national parks are. It has a little bit of everything there that you can go see. It's, got these wonderful sprawling geological scenes. It has, some neat different ecological niches, some different plant life areas. For example, the Emerald Pools are gorgeous, and you don't see those at all in any other park in the United States. But the geological features, it has everything from the hoodoos and granite domes that you would find, say, at Bryce or Canyonlands or Yosemite nearby. Even has waterfalls, not large ones like Yosemite, but it does have waterfalls as well.
So Zion, of course,
missing is a geyser.
And Zion is so close to, I think, five other national parks or national park administered resources right around there in Utah.
It's a perfect central location if you want to explore four or five different parks. Grand Canyon is within a couple of hours. It would be the North Rim rather than the South Rim that you would go to.
That's my favorite, by the way. I like that North Rim better. It's not quite as developed as the South Rim,
I bet you like it. It's a little quieter, not quite as visited.
So the Zion. Now, many of our listeners are part of that demographic you just mentioned, Rob. And then a lot of them, because of gas prices and because of an unprecedented boom in RV sales, the highest levels in decades, people are now filling those bucket lists. So let's start with the three must visit national parks that somebody could do in one season. For example, if you start in May or March or whenever you're going to start, but three national parks that are must see on everybody's bucket list. You mentioned Zion, and I'm betting that's one of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Zion is definitely one of them. I would put it in. If you go to Zion, you're then able to literally within 6 hours drive, you can see five or six other parks. you know, among them would obviously be the Grand Canyon. You can then go through other parts of Utah and see Bryce Canyonlands, Arches National Park, and then swing over into Colorado, and it's only an hour's drive away from the Utah border, and that would take you to Mesa Verde, which you can't drive an RV up, but if you're hauling another vehicle with you, you can easily then drive to the top of the Mesa and see that.
Now, you know, I got to correct you, though. You can if you have a small enough RV. We have a Class B. It's like a camper van. And we Mesa Verde, and we were able to drive ours right up to the top and then get a chance to look at them. But you're so right about anything bigger than that makes it pretty hard. But that's spectacular.
They won't let you go through, or the roads are too narrow to make the turn. But, yeah, with a smaller RV, no problem. Absolutely, Class B wouldn't have any difficulty getting through there at all. You know, in addition to Zion, then you are fairly close yet, if you're willing to make a couple hour drive to get to Death Valley, as well. So, although I wouldn't recommend Death Valley in the summer, but if you're going in spring or autumn, obviously that's the ideal season to see Death Valley. But you know, your question really was, what were the three parks to definitely see? I guess if I had 3 months, unlimited gas funds, I would even be unlimited, you know, a few hundred dollars of gas at tops. I would make a triangle. I would probably start at Yosemite as my top park. Yosemite, of course, the valley is the place you're going to see all the iconic features like El Capitan and Lower Yosemite Falls, Vernal Falls, Half Dome, and so on. But there are other parts of Yosemite you can go to. The Mariposa Grove, for example, has some of the tallest sequoia trees that there are in the country. And in addition, Yosemite puts you really close to Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Parks as well. So that would be one cluster I would do. Then I would swing on over and do Zion, so that way I could get to places like National Star. I can get to Grand Canyon, to the North Rim, and then do some of those other Utah parks, which are all classic geological places to visit and archaeological as well sites. And then for a third cluster, I would go on up to Yellowstone. And of course, with Yellowstone, you're right next to the Grand Tetons, which are just incredible to watch. Even if you never get out and hike, just driving past them is a phenomenal scene. So
that's a great cluster, a triangle of national parks that give you a wide variety of geologic features to see. Give us some of your favorite sites that you write about in your book, best sites to see at America's National Park. Give us some of your favorite sites.
Yeah, my favorite sites. So let's see. I would go and look at Yosemite Falls, upper and lower. That's in the Yosemite Valley at Yosemite National Park. That waterfall is high enough that you could fit two Empire State Buildings into it.
Wow.
Have a few feet to spare. So, I mean, you know, that's an astronomical sight to go see. And that, you know, the other big sites that I would definitely recommend would to go see one of the sequoias or the redwoods, one of the two, you know, depending on what you like. The redwoods, I think it's a more lush type of environment, which what you find on the coast of California, you know, between San Francisco on up to the Oregon border. But if you're close to Yosemite, you know, sequoia is pretty impressive as well. And my favorite grove to go to actually would be the Mariposa Grove, which is in Yosemite. It's just laid out so you can see some different sites. You can walk into fallen trees. You can walk through trees. You can, you know, walk around them. You can see groups of trees and clusters. And it's really difficult to describe or even to put into a picture. You have to almost be there and look up and just be amazed by how big and tall this living thing is that's around you. I like the Emerald Pools as well at Zion. You're out in the middle of a desert, and when you get there, you kind of go up this trail, which just takes you to a real easy walk, but it's an upgrade and you go past areas where these little creeks and mini cascades are flowing down, and they create these wonderfully pure green pools and all these lush plant life. It's sort of like the hanging gardens of Babylon. Yeah. Might be a good way to describe if you've ever seen illustrations or of that, those historical places. But this is a real, you know, actual natural place to go to. Mm-hmm. You know, I like underground too. We often think of national parks as just, you know, being above ground and seeing interesting waterfalls or buffalo or and so on. But there are a few parks that are underground or caves, and Carlsbad Caverns comes to mind for that.
And the Big Mammoth Cave in Kentucky as well. Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Mammoth Cave is impressive. You know, I kind of like Carlsbad slightly more if you are bringing children with you. Mammoth has some restrictions because of the length of the cave. It's so long. It's like a 4.5 mile tour, longest one to see the majority of the top sites, and so they have some restrictions. You know, no toddlers, no infants. For good reason. If it gets to be a long trip for little kids, whereas Carlsbad doesn't really have that so much. But yeah, Mammoth is an outstanding cave to go to, and if you don't have children, you definitely should see it if you get down to Kentucky. Great Smoky Mountains is sort of under a lot of people visit it because of its great location, but I think a lot of people underrate the features that are there. Mm-hmm. You know, the largest. I shouldn't say largest, the tallest section of the Appalachians in that area. And if you can get a nice, clear day, there's nothing better than a walk up there in the morning in the pre-dawn hours.
It's a pretty good hike. It's a half mile up. I did that on a perfect fall day at the absolute peak of color. Got the best color photograph I've ever gotten this fall. So when you're saying that, I'm remembering all these sights that I saw.
Just about any place in Great Smoky's perfect for an autumn hike because it's a mountain elevation, so you've got different ecosystems of trees growing at the different elevations. So you get this range of colors once you get to a summit as you look down at it. It's just incredible a view to see. You know, there's other places depending on what the moment is. You know, if you want a nice romantic type of a hike, you can't go wrong with going out to Hawaii, for example.
I think that's great. Don't let my wife hear that.
And then you can go to stay in the continental U.S. and go to Acadia National Park and see the first sunrise, for example. The trails are nicely wide there, and if you have a nice moonlit night, it's easy to follow those trails and go up in the pre-dawn hours and wait for the sunset, or sunrise, rather.
Well, I'm feeling pretty excited because every place you've mentioned, we have been able to visit over the past 5 years in our RV travels. And I've determined I'm going to use your book a lot this year because we're going to spend most of our time in national parks. I've really come to become a huge fan of them. Now, your book is aimed at those who maybe not have 2 weeks to spend exploring, but it gives you all of the highlights. Tell us a little bit about the book how it will fit in an RV's library.
Sure. Yeah, the book evolved as I was writing it. Originally, it started as these are going to be the best hikes to take kids on at each park. And what I discovered was the best hikes to take kids on weren't necessarily going to see the top features there. And as I kept going to each park, I kept thinking about, well, how can I see the top features at this park and somehow ensure it's a trail I can take my children on? Because I have a young son. And I realized I was thinking about the book all along rather than thinking about it in terms of children. I need to think about it in terms of these are the top sites to see, and these are easy hikes anyone can take, whether they have children or not. And so if you own an RV, regardless of your age or your fitness, as long as you can get out and walk, and in some cases, even if you know you have to rely upon a wheelchair or a cane, you should be able to do most of these trails. We've highlighted if you can't do them, if they're not handicap accessible, for example, or they're limited to not having pets on them, for example. That's all listed and included in the book as well. So it's a great guide to take with you if you're, say, traveling through a state And you suddenly say to yourself, you know what, we're going right by that national park. Why don't we just swing off? It only takes an hour to get there off of the freeway, or maybe even a half hour. I know we've only got the afternoon to do it. What should we see there? So you can go to the book, and it's all divided by parks alphabetically. So if you were driving, say, on the freeway going through Flagstaff, Arizona, and you say to yourself, you know, we're going right by the Grand Canyon. Let's go.
Swing it up. Yeah.
We've only got 3 hours. What should we see? You can go right to the Grand Canyon section, and it will list, in the case of the Grand Canyon, 3 or 4 different trails you can do. And then it has after a little summary or synopsis of 4 or 5 other trails, and looking at what the specific highlights are.
That's great.
Of the park.
Well, I will put a link again to your book, Best Sights to See at America's National Park, on our show notes page. I am delighted that you have a Kindle edition of it available as well, because many of us love those. We can carry lots of books in our RV if we put them on our Kindle, and also your paperback version. So, Rob Bicknell, I wish you great success with the book, and it should be a wonderful year for our national park system as we celebrate the 100th anniversary of the service that makes America's parks our parks. They are owned by us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking, the podcast, with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning us in for this episode of Road Trekking, the RV Travel Podcast. Remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard, if you'd like to be a part of the podcast, you can record a voicemail message. Just click that right-hand button. And hey, while you're there, would you do me a big favor and would you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher? New episodes are released every Wednesday. That way you'll have them automatically sent into your podcast queue on that little podcast app they have. Also, leave us a review. We so appreciate those 5-star kind reviews that you've been getting. That helps us all stay noticed by those who are in the travel category of podcasts. Also, have you thought about joining our mailing list? We send out a special newsletter to subscribers every Monday morning. You can sign up right from the roadtrekking.com blog, and I'll also send you a free packing list if you so subscribe. So thank you for putting me in your ear this week. We've got lots coming. Would love to hear from you in the week ahead. Stay tuned to the blog for the latest stories about the RV travel lifestyle. And, of course, our Facebook group, which is perhaps the most active of any of the RV travel sites you'll find anywhere in social media. We'd love to have you be a part of that as well. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.